Dr. Jeffrey Halstead has been Canandaigua's hometown dentist for more than 35 years, offering routine dental care as well as cosmetic dentistry, implants, and dentures by their highly trained and experienced staff. Visit them online at canandaiguadentistry.com or find them on Facebook and Instagram.
Do you want to know what's happening in the Finger Lakes? We do too. We're going in depth with decision makers in the heart of upstate New York to get the answers you need. From the team of FingerLakes1.com, this is Inside the FLX.
Welcome to episode 480 of Inside the FLX, and it's time for our monthly chat with Canandaigua Mayor Bob Palumbo. Mayor, thanks so much for taking the time today. We have a lot to talk about, but we are 2 months into the new city council. How's everyone settling in?
It's been great. You know, it's always good to get new faces, new ideas, new thoughts on council. And this has been a good council so far to work with, and I'm sure we'll be in the down the road.
Yeah. So obviously the red light camera proposal was the big one from last night, but I'm curious, last night's meeting, obviously March 6th, what were some of the other big issues that you saw or that you took away from last night's session?
Well, the other big issue was we had a resolution to for an $11.8 million bond for some projects coming up. There's a lot of discussion about that. We were fortunate enough to have our new public works director come to the meeting and officially hire Harry Hirsch. She comes from the military, great background, and looking forward to her getting started, moving to Canandaigua for the position. So that's always nice. But the two, those were the red light camera and the bonding were the two big issues last night.
So let's shift gears here and talk a little bit about that proposal, the red light camera proposal. Not final per se, right in this very moment. There's still some more activity that needs to take place. But walk us through council's thought process on that and what happens next.
So the discussion last night or the resolution that came up first was to get home rule authority to actually do this, which is which will go to our Senator Helming and Assemblyman Gallahan, and they would bring it to the state. We'll need that approval first. But the discussion was, do we do that first, or should we get the traffic study and an RFP for what this project would cost and, you know, what the outcome would be? We had a presentation 2 weeks ago from the company that provides the red light cameras, and he's saying it'll be a, you know, neutral, cost neutral, that from the tickets that are put out that would pay for the program, which is about $4,000 per camera. And so, you know, the words came up, you know, we're putting the cart before the horse, and my comment about, you know, what's the cart, what's the horse? So we, you know, the way it was presented was that, you know, companies may not be willing to come in and do all that work if we don't have home rule authority first. So we did finally settle on that we would go forward for the home rule authority and get that, which could take a while. It has to go through through Albany, although those things don't happen fast. So we have to do, so we are going to do that first. So that would be the first step, getting that. Then we go to get a traffic study, which would basically be what intersections would be best suited for this. Then once that's done, probably an RFP first, you know, to get a company that would be willing to come in and do this and, you know, their cost analysis and what it would be. So that would be the process. So it has been, you know, as far as the traffic study, just be, I guess, which intersections, but I'm around town quite a bit and it doesn't go too many days before you see somebody, you know, pretty blatantly running a red light. It's not like, you know, just caught the yellow and, you know, went through it. But it's been happening quite a bit. And, you know, I think there would be a need for this. discussion at the meeting about, you know, whether it was legal or not, because I know some communities pulled their red light cameras.
I'm curious, as far as the public feedback goes, or as you folks were going through the process of, you know, talking with different people in the community, was it motorists who were bringing concerns or pedestrians? Because Canandaigua, obviously the city is one of the most walkable communities in the entire region. This, I would assume, of course, it's going to have benefits for both pedestrians and motorists with some of those trickier intersections. But I was curious what the feedback was like from folks who perhaps aren't exclusively in vehicles, but also are walking.
You know, we've heard from both. And, you know, we've heard from both where it's been, you know, almost got clipped, or, you know, walking across almost got hit. So there has been, you know, some positive feedback. One of those things that's not going to make everybody happy, but it's going to be, I think it's something that's needed, and anything that's going to help, you know, it's a public safety matter. It's definitely not going to be a revenue generator, but it's, you know, it just comes down to that it's a public safety issue.
Obviously, the study, the traffic study, would probably yield this answer, but any estimation on how many intersections may potentially be up for discussion as far as this goes? Obviously, it's not going to be every intersection, right? So do you guys have any kind of number in mind that would be likely, or some high-risk intersections that are a concern?
I really don't know. I mean, that hasn't come up. I think, obviously, at $4,000 a camera, you know, you can't have too many, you know, that are going to be enough to pay for themselves. You know, downtown obviously is the main point where pedestrians would be, you know, in harm. So I imagine they would most likely be somehow through downtown. First Light, you know, right at Ontario and Maine. I come out to that intersection quite a bit, and too many days don't have to go by before somebody goes through there. So.
Yeah.
That'll probably be determined.
Yeah. Every mayor I've spoken with in the last 2.5 months has complained about AIM funding or the lack of updates to AIM funding. I'm sure Canandaigua, and from your point of view, not a hugely different perspective, but I do want your perspective. When you think about the city of Canandaigua, its future, and what AIM funding looks like right now coming out of Albany, what would you like to see? How would you like to see that funding improved?
Well, obviously, any funding, it's been years. You know, if it came up, brought up to inflation, it'd be about 30-some percent, which would be awesome. So obviously that would be the main goal, would be to get it up to that. You know, this is what we use for our general fund, from everything from, you know, every form of public safety, fire, police, public works, equipment, anything in the general fund. You know, just the arterial maintenance, which really isn't part of this, but a separate item. We have state highways coming through the city, or Main Street, 520, Main Street through 332. That's another one. That funding, we get paid 85 cents a square yard to maintain the road, plowing, patching, that kind of thing. And that hasn't changed since the mid-80s at 85 cents a square yard. So just if that was brought up to inflation, and what's been, it's in the budget every year and gets cut out, just that little bit would mean close to another $300,000 to the city. So, you know, it's just a money drain. Same thing with, you know, anything that we don't get from the state, which we get back, which is tax money that taxpayers pay to the state. But that's money that we don't have that we put on the back of the residents again, residents, building owners, you know, through our taxing. So anything that, any of those, just the updates to get, you know, would be a huge plus for the city.
How difficult is it budgeting year to year, knowing that those numbers are so far out of touch with reality right now, because you know you're talking about compensation levels from the 80s, AIM funding late 2000s, maybe early 2010s. How much of a challenge is that now, especially with the inflation we've seen over the last like 2.5 years?
Well, you know, it's a challenge. We want to try to, you know, we're running a business, obviously, here, the city, we're running a business. We have to keep up with our expenses as well as, you know, homeowners. So we try to keep that, you know, we have that in mind, obviously. And it is difficult. And a lot of times, you know, we start our budget process October, November. A lot of times depends on, you know, if the budget's done on time by the state by April 1st, we'll have an idea of what our funding would be, what's coming to us. So we'll have that by then. Difficulty is if we don't get those increases from the state, then the increases that we have to run our business, to run the city, obviously, you know, falls on the taxpayers. So, you know, we're very, you know, cognizant of that, and we try to stay. We've been very good the last several years to, you know, stay under the budget cap, within the budget cap. But at some point, you know, if these things, if we're not getting more money back from the state, at some point, you know, we have to make those adjustments to keep the city running.
So I want to shift gears a little bit. Obviously, this is essentially connected to the tax base. Housing, it's been an issue for years now across the region. But there was a housing project on the north side of the city that the developer in the beginning of last month called it dead, said it was done, not actually going to move forward despite the city giving it the green light. Can you just kind of like cut through the noise on that one and give us sort of an update on where that stands and how Canada will wound up in that spot?
Yeah, we really love to see that project, you know, move forward. It's the second time that one's come through. And I understand, you know, from the builders, the developer's perspective that he has to make money. These houses have to be at a price point he can sell. And obviously, it would have been a great thing for the city to have, you know, the revenue from those homes. You know, affordable housing, when he said they're going to be affordable housing at $400,000+. You know, they're affordable to someone, but when we talk about affordable housing, usually it's not that price point. But still, I think there's a need for that price point in the city, from what we're hearing, that people are paying rents and wait lists for rents in places. But we had a standard that we set years ago for sidewalks, as you mentioned in the beginning, that we're a very walkable city. And that's because we have the sidewalks his original proposal was sidewalks on one side of the street. And we really wanted sidewalks on both sides of the street. It's a safe, you know, safety factor, makes for a nicer neighborhood. And granite curbings, it's just a Canandaigua thing. We've always wanted granite curbings, and you know, that wasn't in his original proposal. And I understand those things cost more money. And I think the things that we wanted in there just got him to maybe a price point that he couldn't make work. We have heard that, we're not sure what he's going to do next. He's talked about possibly selling the project or selling the property. It's been on the books for quite a long time when that Canandaigua Classics was first developed. It's always a plan to extend that into that area. There's also a project on Chapel Street that I think may be coming back that also ties into that project or into the Canandaigua Classics. So we're hoping that, that it'll come back and we can work something out.
Yeah. When it comes to the city's housing challenges right now, are those kind of the two lead candidates as far as developable areas right now in the city that, say, could be acted on in the next year or two?
Those are two main, you know, vacant properties. There is a property that's been going on for quite a while, the old Labelon building on Chapin Street. It's been several developers, you know, in and out of that. There is another developer that is working with the current owner, and that would be a great thing for Canandaigua. That'd be, I think it's 40 some apartments, and I think it's going to be workforce housing or price point, which would be great, which we really need. Anytime you have, you know, apartments downtown, we've been working on that a lot with several grants to get second floors of buildings to renovate for apartments. So at 10 Chapin Street, 40 some apartments downtown that would be at a great price point, rent price point. Really looking forward to that. The other project that's maybe coming up in the next year or two is on the lakefront development. There are new owners in that, and they come in one time last year, and they'll be coming in soon. I hope we hear with another proposal for that project. So those are the ones that could be coming forward in the next couple of years.
You mentioned that $400,000 price point kind of being a touchy topic for this city when it comes to new housing. When you think about workforce housing, what do you think that price point is that folks in the city would be more comfortable with seeing developed in mass? If we are talking about a large scale development, is it like somewhere in that 2 to 250 range, or is it a little above that or below that, or where do you think it falls?
I think it's in that range. These, you know, the apartments that we're talking about on Chapin Street. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's been a couple of years since I heard from one developer, and this is a new one. But I think that would probably be in the 1,200 to maybe 1,800 a month range. In that range, I would think.
Yeah.
But all right. You know, it's hard when you're talking about a new development like we had a. North Road, it's difficult. The house may be a $200,000 house or $250,000 house, but when you figure all the infrastructure that has to go in, you know, the roads, the sewers, the water lines, the everything, fire hydrants, trees, you know, that adds to the price. So, you know, it's a $400,000 house with about $150,000 maybe of, you know, it's not directly the house itself. So, hard to do these days with the, you know, with the way the construction materials have gone up. It'd be hard to do that.
Yeah. Last question for you here, regard to the lake, Canandaigua Lake, of course. The city got a grant earlier this year to fight invasive species on Canandaigua Lake. How is this funding going to be used? It was around $140,000, right?
Yeah, so the problem, you know, the main thing is at Lagoon Park. There's a species there, invasive species, it's the European buckthorn, and that, I guess, can just take over all the other, you know, species of plants down there and just, you know, kill them off or overtake them. And we've done this a few years ago, and it seems like it's something that's every few years. And there is some, you know, debate, but the Lagoon Park is actually on the outlet side of the lake. So anything that is done there would not actually affect the lake. And the way that it's been done is that you cut these off and just spot spray that plant. It's not like we're coming in and, you know, overspraying everything. It's very specific to that root of that plant. So, you know, I think what the chemicals they use are nasty, and very carefully done. And, we are, you know, obviously we're concerned about what happens downstream from the lake. So that's a concern. But as far as this affecting the lake itself, it would not and the way it's done is done so carefully that there can be anything downstream that would be harmful to anything, or the, you know, the wildlife that's in the park.
Sure. All right, Mayor. Hey, really appreciate the time. We will catch up with you again next month. Okay.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.